truth, lies, shenanigans, truth, lies, shenanigans.
Hey, welcome to the Truth, Lies, Shenanigans podcast, where your favorite hosts bring you some of the most interesting topics of the week to discuss and ask the question, is this truth, lies, or shenanigans? And we always try to have fun with some shenanigans of our own along the way with amazing guests, games, and spirited conversations. My name is Neil Nix. For this week's show, we have Niecy Jordan joining us to talk about her book, Behind Closed Doors, and her recent conversation with Olivia and Gianni on the Beyond the Scars podcast, where she shares her story about childhood molestation, adult abuse, and how she was able to persevere. In our main topic, we are talking about Mitch McConnell basically saying blacks are not Americans. And in quick fire, we're talking about an anti-vaxxer getting COVID on purpose and dying. And rappers are fighting to have their lyrics ignored in the courts. And in Shenanigans the Game Show, we're playing the game called Interesting Thoughts. So it should be fun. Now, before we get into the show, let me introduce you to our amazing host for the next hour, the professor, journalist, editor, and sports intern mentor at ESPN, Ms. Lizzie Enders.
What's up, everyone? Happy Sunday fun day. I hope you guys had an amazing week. Things in the Washington, D.C. area, the DMV, we got hoodwinked again. We were promised snowstorms on 2 days, and we got nothing. So, you know, we still have a couple of more, at least a month and a half left of winter, so I'm hoping we can squeeze in another snowstorm. But other than that, it was a very busy week for me, busy day today, so I'm just trying to catch my breath and keep up with everyone.
I feel you, And of course, the gamer, tech guru, and bona fide rock star from the rock band Fallen Machine, coming to you from Ontario, Canada, Mr. Robbie Rock.
What's up? What's up, everyone? Happy Sunday fun day. I had an amazing week. And Liz, I think that we got the snow that you missed. It's been a winter week up here. It's been we've had some Arctic chill for sure. We've had some snow, but I had a wonderful week. I got to play a board game with my daughter. We got to play Pop-O-Matic Trouble, aww, Frustration, and it was really great until she got tired of it and started rolling nines and 14s and 23s. So once excited.
I remember Trouble. I loved that game growing up. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just a lot of fun to just play with her, see her playing a counting game, and then just getting tired of it and going, I got a 14. No, it's for real. This is the rule. This is perfect.
All right. And we have our college student, actress, model, entrepreneur, and the host of our newest podcast, Beyond the Scars, streaming from Atlanta, Georgia, Miss Gianni Storm.
Hello, guys. Hello, everybody. We're almost finished with January. We made it.
I know,
Yes, we made it the first month of the year, so I'm excited about that. And also, Atlanta is snowing. Can you believe it?
Nuh-uh. You lied.
I know. Only one
show
day.
Me the receipt.
And it didn't stick.
Show me the receipt. Show me the receipt. That'll give
me I should have. I know I should have took a video, but it didn't stick. But we definitely have this cold route. I know my hands have been ashy. Trust me, it's been very cold outside. But yeah.
Sure, it's no Johnny. Sure.
Listen. You are a brown girl. You have no excuse for ash. You have no excuse.
No excuse for ash.
No excuse.
Like, that should never be the case. I know.
Ever.
Things are cold, but they're good. They're moving along. They're good.
All right. Good to hear. So, Gianni, you and Olivia launched a brand new podcast, Beyond the Scars. So, tell us all about it.
Yes. So Beyond the Scars, we have stories that talk about pain, obstacles, uncertainty, and how the individual persevered through that. So individuals from all walks of life. And we like to let people share their stories so that it can connect to somebody that relates to it, somebody that might be going through something similar, and they find help in those stories. So it's a humble podcast. We drop episodes every Wednesday. And you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor FM. And we also would like for you guys to join our Facebook group. So go to Beyond the Scars on Facebook and join the group and subscribe to our podcast.
That's awesome. So the latest episode, what was that all about?
Quick, latest episode, we had guest Nisi J. She spoke about her childhood molestation, and she also spoke about abuse that she experienced as an adult, which was very traumatic. But at the same time, it was a good story. If you guys want to check out that episode, it already dropped. It's on Anchor FM and all everywhere you can watch podcasts.
That's awesome. And fortunately, we were able to get Nisi onto our show. So make sure you check out that episode when you can. But let's hear straight from Nisi Jordan. Today's spotlight is on author of Behind Closed Doors, Tanisha Nisi Jordan. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. So Nisi is a wife, mother, grandmother, and of course, new author of the book Behind Closed Door, where she talks about her life dealing with childhood molestation, toxic relationships, abuse, and suicide attempts, and how she was able to persevere. She also shares more of her complex story in the latest episode of Beyond the Scars with our own Gianni and Olivia. So Nisi, again, thank you so much for joining us. We do appreciate you joining.
Thank you.
So before we get into your story, Nisi, so feel free to share a little bit about yourself. And of course, we always ask everyone, if you can add something in there that we simply can't Google about you.
Oh, well, as you mentioned, I am from up north. I am from Northeast Ohio. And I've moved to North Carolina, I think, of 2014 to get away from the snow that you guys were talking about. I am here enjoying the one day of snow. And I am an entrepreneur. I am now an author, which I love. Something I never thought I'd do. Because I hate reading and I hate writing.
Okay, yeah, two things not to do if you're an author. Not to hate if you're an author.
You say that to an English professor. You say that to an English professor.
That's right. The English professor.
But I'm loving the journey, though.
Good.
But one thing you can Google about me is that I am really passionate now about writing, especially about the things that I've been writing about. And so I am looking, hopefully, in the near future, I would love to have a nonprofit organization to help, you know, teens that's going through, you know, what I've gone through. And so that's what I'm hoping.
That's amazing.
Beautiful.
Amazing. That is amazing.
So your story is pretty harrowing, you know, as a child growing up, dealing with molestation from family members and then an abusive relationship as an adult. What drove you to write this book? Because I have a similar story to yours. I mean, minus the molestation, but I've always wanted to write a book about it. I even put out an outline and started to really actually get into it. And then I just kind of lost the drive for some reason. So how did you find the drive and inspiration to write your book?
Well, you know, as women, a lot of times we like to write down our feelings, and it seems that we can express more how we feel by writing. So just so happened a particular day that I was, you know, upset. And I know a lot of my anger is driven from my past. So I just wanted to start writing, you know, just getting everything off of my chest. And just so happened, as I'm writing about, you know, why I'm angry, my husband said, you know what, you should probably put all of your anger into a book. And so I said, you know what, I think I'm going to do that. So I just started writing down things that had happened to me, you know, from when I was a child until, you know, current. I just got to writing, and he said, turn it into a book. So I said, you know what? Okay. Because now I'm able to actually get everything out versus, you know, verbally, I was unable to do that. Yeah. But writing, yeah, I just put it all on paper.
It's amazing. Beautiful. So, Robbie, what is your question?
Macy, thank you so much for the work that you're doing, because I think that most of us are victims of some form of household trauma or trauma in relationships. So I think what you're doing has great value. While I was researching you a little bit, I came across the GoFundMe that you have going on for the Lorain High School students.
Yeah.
And I really wanted you to give you an opportunity to tell us more about that. So if you could please share what you're putting together for these young adults and what happened.
As you guys know, I am from up north, and I did attend Lorain High. Lorain High was currently, or was Emerald King High School, and now Lorain High. Being from that city, I received the video, but when I saw it, immediately, of course, you know, it took me back. And they were crying, they were pouring out their hearts to, you know, the teachers, the other students, explaining, you know, what had happened. And they were not being hurt. So for me, instantly, it was like, you have to figure out something to do. I can't save the world. However, I thought, you know what? There has to be something done for these kids, because they're crying out for help. And obviously, they're not getting it. And so, or they're not being heard, you know, according to them. They're not being heard. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to put together some type of a that will allow them to come together with me and several other adults from that city to talk and express, you know, what is on their heart, what's on their mind, and be able to release it with no judgment. And so right now I'm put together the GoFundMe so I could raise money to put this together, as well as purchase, you know, a number of books and journals.
Yay.
Comment online from Jacqueline Robinson: the real Me Too movement, founded by a sister in Harlem, was all about allowing young people to have a safe space to speak about their abuse. Unfortunately, it's been colonized and bastardized by Hollywood actresses. Olivia, our other host of Beyond the Scars, I appreciate that Niecy actually printed the book and journal. The internet stuff just isn't the same. Melanie, Rochelle, James, I'm so glad that your husband was supportive. All right. Johnny Storm, question.
Yes. So, Niecy, I know that you mentioned you did, along your journey, find more passion with writing. Do you have any books coming out, any other writings, or anything else that you would author?
Absolutely. Currently, I am finishing up my children's
book. Your children's book.
That is actually in the hands of an illustrator. So that will be done this month. Well, I'm sorry, February. So it's for the age of eight. It's the Behind Closed Doors, Good Touch, Bad Touch. So I'm also looking to do a few more books pertaining to, you know, the same thing, you know, the Good Touch, Bad Touch, but for older children. Still trying to work that out, but I definitely had to get a children's book out, you know, for the children, you know, especially with my grandson. He's 5, and then I have a 1-year-old granddaughter, and I wanted to get a book that will help them. So that is actually the outcome. I'm excited.
Okay. All right, children's book. That's great, because I think when I was listening to the episode on Beyond the Scars, one of the things that struck me is when you said the difference now about telling your parents when something is wrong versus how you felt as a child. You didn't know it was wrong, and you didn't know to tell your parents that something wrong was happening to you. So doing a book like this, you know, kind of brings that to light. So, all right, Liz, your question.
So one, I want to honestly applaud you again for, you know, coming forward and sharing your story with us, but also for utilizing the power of the pen, the power of writing, because I think a lot of times, you know, when something happens to us as humans, as women, as men, when we experience trauma, sometimes we can't speak, but we can write. And so I think you are proving that, you know, you can heal and get your voice out, maybe not speaking it, but putting it down on paper. And I say that as someone who talks a lot. I have a big voice, right? But I also, you know, I mentioned before, you know, I'm an English professor, I'm a writer, I'm a journalist. So I'm used to kind of doing both. But I too have a similar story. You know, I also am a survivor of child sex abuse. And in the moment, in listening to your episode, your Beyond the Scars episode with Olivia and Gianni, I didn't, like you, I didn't say anything at first. And I think that was one of the few times in my life where I was silenced. Like, I was forced into a period where I couldn't speak. I couldn't say anything. But when I did, so we're talking, for me, it was between the ages of 9 and 10 and a half. And then it took me maybe another year to say something. But when I did, it was probably at that point in my life, but in my overall upbringing, probably the most courageous moment of me. Mm-hmm. And so what made you finally decide to tell, to just give your truth to your family, your parents, you know, if and when you told them, your siblings? Like, what made you feel comfortable in telling your story?
When I finally told my parents, I think it was because I just had enough. I was in the middle of, you know, the domestic violence relationship with the domestic violence. And I just had enough. And it was just so much that I had bottled up, because even with my relationship, though my parents knew something was going on in that relationship, they didn't really come to me and say, hey, we know this is going on. They were the type to stay out the business unless I've come to them with the business. But I just had enough of everything, from the molestation and holding all of that in, from the abuse of the second husband. And so I said, you know what? I need to open up. I need to tell my father, right, my mother, you know, what had happened to me. Though I didn't come busting in home to tell them what happened during the physical abuse, I did tell them.
And I'm happy that you were able to do that and have a voice. Were you scared when you had to, you know,
at that moment to tell them?
Yeah.
I was, because I didn't know how they were going to take it. Especially knowing my uncle at the time, he was locked up. He was in prison for doing 15 years for raping his 10-year-old father. Oh. And so that specific day that I went and talked to them, my dad was actually on his way out of the home to go visit him. And so, you know, to bust in to say, hey, this happened to me, you know, it was tough. Wow. Because my dad, first of all, he's fighting cancer. And that was another thing. I didn't want to put all of that pressure on him because he was sick.
Yeah.
And but I had to tell him. And so, yes, I was scared because I didn't know how it was going to affect him. I didn't know. I just didn't know. And so, you know, when I told him, you know, he went to visit with my uncle. What he said to him, I have no idea. And I just wanted to get it off my chest. And whatever happened from that point on, it happened.
Let it go.
So, yeah. Yeah, I just let it
and
go.
And I don't think a lot of people realize, whether you are a child or you are an adult, it takes a lot to get the strength to tell what is happening to you, especially if it's in a family, right? If the abuse is in a family, because it's going to shake up the entire dynamic of the family, relations, situations, relationships, all of that. For me, when I told, I was still young. I think I was probably 12 and a half, maybe. And that was probably the hardest conversation I ever had in my life with my dad, because I told him first. I was shaking. I was kind of talking around it. And then I whispered it in his ear. That's how I told. Because I didn't want it to come out of my mouth, really. And so in listening to your story, I related to that so much. What do you think, or how would you describe, because telling is such a large part of it, and it's such a hard part of it, How would you describe your family's reaction, like, once people started to understand and realize what was happening to you, not only as a child, because we're talking about for you two different phases of abuse, you know, childhood, you know, abuse, but then also of domestic violence within a marriage. So when you were able to finally release, like, what was the response within the family?
So when I told my father about my uncle, of course, you know, he was upset. He was upset. My mom was hurt. And they were the only ones. I mean, my sister, I didn't tell her. She didn't find out until after the book was released. Wow. And my mother, she really didn't get the full story either until after the book was released. They just got a piece of what I told them, you know, but I just got what I needed to get off that day off my chest. And I was okay, but I knew there was a lot more that I needed to say. And so there was no other way to do it but to put it on paper to really get it out. Unfortunately, my father's not here now to know what all took place, except for what I told him that day.
Wow. And so where are you now with your family?
Everything is good. Actually, I found out a couple more family members some things happened to them after I released the book. My mother, you know, she was extremely hurt after reading the book because her words to me was, if I would have known, we would have protected you, but we didn't think we would have to protect you from your grandfather and your uncle.
Right.
Like I said, with the physical abuse, with the domestic violence, they knew, but again, I was grown, so they weren't really trying to involve themselves unless they really, really needed to.
So let me, there's some comments online. Jose says, so brave. Mike Winter says, empowering moment. And then Jeanette Brown says, we're often brainwashed by our abusers to think no one will believe us. She also says, it is especially difficult when the abuser is a parent, in your case, a grandparent. My next question is, you mentioned that your parents only get involved. You just said your parents only got involved when they felt it was necessary. Do you wish that your parents stayed more involved in your life and asked more questions and, you know, wanted to know what was happening so that they could maybe better give you guidance, better protect you? Do you wish that were the case, that they had done something different?
Well, you know, my parents have always been there from day one, and they've always instilled in me and my sister, you know, what we should look for when it comes to, you know, different things. But, you know, as we get older, we're hard-headed. We are so hard-headed. And so, you know, I basically did what I wanted to do. And I did not want to involve them when it came to the domestic part of it because, again, my father was sick. And I did not want to stress either one of them out with any of that. So it was like more of me just trying to handle it myself. My brother-in-law and my sister, they did a lot of the jumping, you know. So when the abuse was happening, they did a lot of the protecting. And you know, later we'll tell, you know, them what happened. But I did not want my parents to get involved.
Okay. Good to know.
And I think that's common. I think it happens a lot, especially, you know, as it relates to childhood. You know, sexual abuse as it relates to adult domestic violence. We're not conditioned. Because you have a lot of parents who say, for example, I won't let anyone watch my kids unless they're family. Like, we're conditioned to believe that family won't hurt us. But family, they're the first people that have access to your children, that have access to us. And so abusers come in every shape, form, color, gender. And that's what we need to, you know, remember as we're walking through this life. Like, the face of an abuser is not something that we could just put on a poster. It could be anyone. Right, and even as it relates to domestic violence, like, you know, this person you were married to and you would never think. And then all of a sudden it's just like, wow, here we go. Wow.
So we're running short on time. I know, Nisi, you've got to go and, see your grandkids. Final comments online. Jeanette Brown says, it's so hard. On one hand, it is hard not to be hurt that the people around us didn't see us and help us. At the same time, we were also working really hard to seem like nothing is wrong. And then Paulette Bertrand says, thank you so much for coming forward with this. As we know, many do not have the strength to come forward. Ade says, you are a brave soul, Nisi. Continue to stay strong, sending love and light to you. Thank you for having the courage to share your story. This is Jeanette Brown again. Silence turning in towards ourselves, rounded shoulders, low self-esteem, depression, abrupt behavior change. A few things to look for. Yeah. And that's the kind of the final question I want to ask is, what should a parent be looking for in a child who may be dealing with sexual abuse or molestation?
It's so tough. Of course, you have to watch their pattern. You know, we children, 1 minute they're one way, and then you have to, you know, if their behavior is different, really pay attention. You know, and when they start to be shut off, you know, and quiet, like there's just the behavior, the change in their behavior is the most important.
Exactly.
And as soon as you see that, you want to start asking questions. Period.
Okay.
All right, Nisi, I want to thank you so much for joining us and telling your story.
Thank you.
Do you have any final words for everyone out there? Any final words before you leave? Any shout outs, anything you want to say?
I basically, you know, for all of those who have gone through, you know, what I've gone through, you know, just pray. That's just bottom line. You have to pray on everything. And those, if someone is hurting you, you know, you have to be able to just speak out. Just speak up. Do not hold this stuff in, because it will cause an issue in your future, because it did for me. It took a while to get out of that slump, but never let someone keep you so imprisoned that you cannot talk. Talk, speak. Tell someone, you know, tell someone that you trust. That's the purpose of my job. Just tell someone.
Okay. All right, Nisi, thank you again so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Make sure you check out
her book, Behind Closed Doors. The link is in the description. Go ahead and get it right now. It's a fantastic read. So thank you again, Nisi, for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, great guest. And you've got to check out her story on Beyond the Scars, because it's really an in-depth story. She goes into a little more detail. You really need to take a listen. So Beyond the Scars, you can go to beyondthescars.show if you're having trouble finding it, but you should be able to find it anywhere that you listen to podcasts.
I think we're going to talk about this topic more on the after show. I think we're going to explore it a little bit more on the after show.
Yeah.
I think we have to explore it a little bit more. All right, let's get into our quick fire.
What?
All right, it's time for quick fire. Our hosts have some topics they want to share, but we only have 3 minutes to discuss and 1 minute to hear from you. So type in your comments fast. Any topics where a host won't shut up, we have the dreaded mute button, and they can save their comments for our after
show. Y'all ain't muting me. Whatever.
All right, let's do it. Lizzie, you're up first.
We are talking about Jay-Z. Neo had me. That phrase is in my head now, Neo.
Jazzy.
In the pre-show. Jazzy, but also, like, you know, fuck Jay-Z. But we're talking about Jay-Z and a few of his fellow rappers who are challenging some of the laws in New York City as it relates to freedom of artistic expression, if you will. So they want to, you know, strike down the law in which the local or the state government, you know, in New York City can use their lyrics against them, can use, let's say, for example, Jay-Z, and he, I don't think he has any lyrics about killing people, but let's say, for example, you know, rappers who tend to talk about, you know, their criminal activities in their lyrics, whether it be selling drugs, whether it be stealing, or, excuse me, assaulting people, murdering people, killing people.
Yeah.
So they want to ban the opportunity from, you know, the legal system to use those lyrics against them, to bring charges against them, to use those lyrics as evidence in possible cases, in future cases. So my question to my panel is, what do you think about this? Are you for or against this? Do you think this is a fair bill, a fair law that they're trying to, you know, change, trying to shift?
Let's start with Gianni Storm.
Do I think it's fair? No. Do I think it's smart? Yes, because a lot of people do have their confession. They lay the whole story out in detail in some of the in some of their verses. But I was a little biased because as we were kind of getting into this, I looked up if this was an issue. Like, were there a lot of rappers that were really kind of being affected by this? And actually, there are. Even though they're not like mainstream rappers, there are a lot of like local rappers that are kind of take advantage of. But it's not fair to me. I'm just gonna say that. I don't think it's fair. I think it's freedom of expression, and I do think you should separate the art from the individual.
All right. Real quick, I'll just say, you know, I think a lot of people do confess some things in their lyrics. And if it is found that there's some corroborating evidence, I think they should be considered. Although I understand that some people may be referring to other people's crimes or it may be exaggerated. Yeah. You know, I get that. So I get their point. Anyway, I'll let you go, Rob.
So when I'm glad that Liz put this out there, because when I first looked at it, I had to really admit a cultural bias, because I don't identify with a lot of lyrical content in rap because, well, yeah, it's just not around me. But it's interesting to me that rap and metal get drawn into these types of characterizations. I don't know if you remember in 85, the PMRC, the Parents Music Resource Center, this is why we have parental advisories on albums now, but it reminded me of the witch hunt was led against metal back in the day, because they testified that it filled youthful ears with pornography and violence, and it glorified behaviors from suicide, drugs, occult, you know, that kind of shit. The issue that I have with lyrical content is if you identify an antagonist by name in a precarious, dangerous, murderous situation. Like, if someone sang about me being in their trunk while they're packing heat and something happens to me, fuck, look into that. Please look into that.
okay. Yeah.
To me, I guess that's the only place where I kind of draw the line when you start identifying particular harm.
We can pick it up later. So, like, Lizzie?
One, I think it's bullshit. I think it's bullshit, and I think it's misguided, especially, you know, from this group of rap artists, who the majority of rap artists that are trying to get this movement going are former criminals, if you will. My thing is that, you know, where do we draw the line between art and someone being a dumbass and confessing their crime?
It's a tough line.
What's the difference between, you know, Jay-Z potentially talking about XYZ crime in his song versus me texting somebody about it?
Yeah, it's a tough line to draw.
Like, where's the difference? All right. So, no, I'm not for this. I think it's bullshit.
All right. Latoya Blakely, ma'am, Lizzie, as usual, reading my mind. If you kill someone and are dumb enough to put the details about the murder into the song to incriminate yourself, go directly to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Hello. I may have committed a crime in my life. I may have slept with your man, but I'm not writing about it. Come on.
Jacqueline Robbins says, there's no statute of limitations on murder. If you are big, bad, and bold enough to confess to a crime, you should suffer the consequences. Mike Winter, that was an SVU episode last week where this Bama admitted to murdering someone. Admission is absolutely admissible as evidence.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, all right. Is this truth, lies,
or y'all know what I'm going to say.
I don't have my
shenanigans. I think that we could just.
I'm going to say it for you, Gianni. Bullshit.
Yeah, I choose.
For Gianni.
Okay, so what is it?
I think that it is truth and shenanigans to it. Because I do think
that's my girl.
I'm on their side.
I got your signs, girl.
Okay. Shenanigans. This is going to give them an out to confess shit and then be able to get out of jail for it. All right. All right, Robbie, you are up next.
All right. So this week, 57-year-old Hannah Horka, probably a name you're not familiar with, but she is a very popular anti-vax folk singer from the Czech Republic. And she could no longer perform with her band Asanance, which is the oldest folk band in the Czech Republic. The band was founded in 1976, and Hannah was a member from 1985. The band is still up and running. They've got 14 albums out. Now, her beef was that there were new vaccination requirements or proof of recovery from COVID-19 required to enter concert halls and performance venues, so she was no longer able to perform. When her husband and son, who are vaxxed, caught the virus, she decided that it was a great opportunity to get a health pass without having to get her jab, so she could prove recovery. She became infected and seemed to be recovering when she posted on social media, "I survived. It was intense. So now there will be theater, sauna, a concert, and an urgent trip to the sea." Then on Sunday morning, she passed away after choking to death. Now her 24-year-old son, Jan Reck, shared that it was heartbreaking that she chose to listen to strangers on social media rather than her own family who loves her. So I want your thoughts on how dangerous anti-science beliefs really have become. And also, if you could share one anti-vaxxer's method of fighting COVID that you've heard of that can actually cause us harm.
All right, Robbie left us a minute and 30. Go ahead, Gianni.
When Trump said that you should drink bleach, or somebody said that they should drink like hydrochloric or bleach and that helped, That was ridiculous. But to answer your question, my view on anti-science, I don't have a problem with people questioning science, homeopathic, whatever it's called. I don't have a problem with people questioning that. You have to have your own mind in this world. But I do have a problem with them replacing science methods with like unproven theories or like things that are just like,
you mean nonsense? Are we calling it nonsense? Okay, nonsense.
Yeah. Well, call it for what it is. Bullshit? You mean bullshit? Yeah.
All right. So, real quick. So I'll point out Meatloaf, Herman Cain. There's so many anti-vaxxers. Meatloaf died from COVID. And he was an anti-vaxxer just like the rest of them.
And Meatloaf said, "If I die, I die."
Yeah, that's what happened. So I think these people are idiots. They're idiots. I'm leaving 20 seconds for Lizzie. Go ahead.
I just don't understand it. I just don't understand, especially, you know, when you, you're a mother, you're a wife. So you're not just, you know, swinging it solo like me. You have other people that depend on you, that love you. And people who are anti-vaxxers, it's not like, you know, they're totally, you know, removing themselves from everything medical, right? They're taking a whole lot of other shit throughout their lives. They drink, they smoke weed, they, you know, inject themselves with all these other things. But when it comes to this one particular vaccine, it's like, oh, I don't trust medicine. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Yeah, Nonsense. All right, we got a bunch of comments online. I'll catch the other comments in a bit. Mike Winter, so dumb. I feel no sympathy whatsoever for these anti-vaxxers. I'm so sick of my glasses fogging up because of my wearing my mask. Get the damn shot, you whiny ass babies. All right, Latoya, this is one of those people that both saddens and pisses me off. Shaking my fucking head. Sad. I will always be sad about people dying from this terrible virus, but simultaneously pissed the fuck off that they intentionally put themselves in harm's way to be taken away from the people who love them most.
They show make it hard to be compassionate and sad.
Yeah.
Like, I'm never going to champion someone dying because they didn't get the vaccine, but they show do make it hard for me to feel bad for them.
Yeah. Jose says, "I cannot, same as you, I cannot feel bad for their choices. Think of the others." And she also says, "Preach, Lizzie." Jacqueline Robinson, "I've said it before and I will reiterate it. I am out of F's to give for people who knowingly put themselves and others in harm's way." Totally agreeing with that. So what are we calling this?
Oh, I feel bad that she died.
Everything is bullshit for Lizzie, it looks like.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with you guys.
It's all shenanigans for me.
Do you know how many rapid tests I've taken over the
past? I've taken a bunch. Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah, it's because, you know, and I don't go out anywhere, but I go to CVS.
I go out.
And the one person in CVS who doesn't have a mask on, I come back home like, okay, I have it. Or the one time last week when I forgot to put my mask on and came back home in literal tears,
so you,
I took rapid tests for 2 days straight because I'm like, I got it. And so then you have these other people who are unvaxxed, shamelessly unvaxxed, running around. It's like, you don't understand the stress that is put on the rest of us.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, I told you guys a story about a guy who had... I go play volleyball. There's a guy who was coughing next to me, and I was, he pulled his mask down. Come to find out, he caught COVID. It's always those assholes that catch COVID. So, anyway, all right. So, yeah, so that's it. All right, let's get to our main topic.
Truth, lies, shenanigans.
All right. What you got, Neo?
Yeah, I've got this one. I've got this full... So, all right.
We're talking about the chicken neck.
So, this past Wednesday, Republicans in the Senate blocked the Freedom to Vote John Lewis Act, which would have made voting more accessible across the nation. At a press conference after it failed, reporter Pablo Manriquez asked the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, about the impact and concerns of voters of color. Wait, I may need to enunciate a little better. Mitch McConnell. And here's what he said, quote, the concern is misplaced because if you look at the statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans. Now, the great poet and author Toni Morrison once said, in this country, American means white. Everybody else has to hyphenate. So my question to you guys is really simple. Was she right? Start with Rob.
I think it's indicative because, you know, when I stop and think about it, we don't have that many hyphens in Canada. I mean, there are groups that choose to identify differently, but we don't label it. We're Canadian.
Canadians.
Pretty much as simple as that. And I guess it's not the first time that Mitch McConnell has made statements that are a little problematic when it comes to racial sensitivity, if you will. And then I take a look at it and kind of go, this is a 79-year-old man. And just a few weeks ago, we were discussing whether or not there should be some kind of cap on when people stop serving. Just because you're from a different era at that point. You may have some old ideas that are ingrained and they come out subconsciously. So I don't think it was a very deliberate thing to say, but it sure was a dumb thing to say.
Yeah. Tiani Storm.
That's funny because I was actually going to bring that up too, Rob. Like when we talked about it a few weeks ago, and I remember calling, I don't think it was that same episode, but I remember calling them old farts at one point because it's like they have this old way, old outdated method, mindset. So sometimes even though they kind of have developed into the new times, they still say things that are like, okay, he still thinks we're this way. So it's just interesting. I don't even remember the question. What was the question? So,
the question is, you know, the question was, so in this country, American means white. Everybody else has to hyphenate. Was Toni Morrison correct?
Still yes. My answer is still yes.
Oh, so that's what it means. All right.
Everybody else does still have to. Yes.
And okay, Lizzie, real quick. Duh. I have a follow up. Duh. All right. So duh. Okay. So then the other question is, how do we change it? How do we change it? Go ahead. So how do we change it as well?
Oh.
We're not the majority in this country, so I'm not sure we can change it. We're not the majority in our government. We're not the majority in business. We're not the majority in the population. So I'm not sure we can change it. Like, if you look at a lot of these incidents that have happened or that have been posted on social media over the past 2 years or whatever, when people are saying, go back to your country, go back to where you came from, they're not saying that to white people.
You mean Americans? Americans?
Americans, yes, in America. We're talking about America, not Canada. I don't know what's going on in Canada.
No,
in
I mean, America, no, not white people. Quote, Americans.
People of Asian descent have endured that during the pandemic. It hasn't been pretty in Canada.
But here in this country, they're not talking to white people. They're talking to everybody else that needs a hyphen to prove their nationalism, to prove their status. And think about it. You know, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 wasn't written to protect white folks and their right to vote. The 24th Amendment, which abolished poll taxes for voting, wasn't for white people. This was all for black people. We had to write things in our government, in our constitution, to protect black people and their right to vote. So, of course, Toni Morrison is right. We're an afterthought. We're an other as it relates to government, as it relates to Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell, his wife is Taiwanese. You don't hear him talking about, oh, well, you know, Taiwanese people have the right to vote just as much as other Americans. What? So, you don't hear him saying that.
So the other thing that the reporter actually asked referred to people of color, not necessarily black people. But of course, Mitch McConnell was like, you know, African Americans and comparing black and white. But if you really look at it, you know, people of color includes Latinos, indigenous people, various immigrated citizens. So, I mean, you said white people to the majority. I don't know that that's truly the case. Because for one, if we're talking about like one drop of blood makes you black, for example, then I don't think there's very few white people that don't have a drop of blood that's not some other
person of color. I'm going by the consensus. I'm not going by what you think. I'm going by the registered consensus. Okay. What the population demographic is in this country, and white people out of the 370 million people in this country, of people
who identify as white.
Who identify
as a lot of passing people too.
But we're not talking about them. Like, you know, we didn't just all of a sudden, you know, come to this, okay, white people are a minority. That's what they want you to think here. So don't feed into that argument. White folks are still the majority in this country. I'm not saying an overwhelming majority, but a majority nonetheless. And even if you think they are some type of minority, they are not. They are the governing body.
That's not what I'm saying. That's certainly not what I'm saying.
They are the governing body in this country. And so, of course, you have all of the, like Mitch, you know, he racist. You have all of these people, you know, in Congress, in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, former president from, you know, a year and a half ago, who are just now taking their sheets off. People are feeling comfortable now in this country, you know, walking around with no sheets on, talking a whole lot of bullshit. And so that's why I agree with Toni Morrison as it relates to who's in power and in charge in this country. Yeah, we're an afterthought. We're hyphenated. And it's going to take we were that even under Obama, even under Obama, like Mitch McConnell.
Do you think that
challenged everything that Obama tried to do for this country, every single thing, from the rooter to the tutor. So yeah, it's not something that I think we're going to see in our lifetime, this type of change where we are on level ground.
I just want to actually look at a comment from Jacqueline Robinson, who says the new census shows that Caucasians will be a minority in a few more years, and these laws are a violent reaction to that.
Yep. I can see that.
And I think it's relevant to what we're saying.
It's weird. Exactly.
I think it depends, though, again, because that may be true as it relates to the census, but they won't be a minority where it counts. They won't be a minority when it comes to government, when it comes to business, when it comes to representation.
So that was going to be my next question. Do you think how could that change happen? Like, if we, I know it may not be in our lifetime, but in the next couple of generations, what would that look like? Would it look like more people of color in charge, and that kind of changes things by us being in charge?
Well, people need to fucking vote. Like, that, first and foremost, people need to vote. They need to get involved in the democracy that we have here, in the democratic process that we have here. I'm not talking about just voting for president. You need to vote at the local level. You need to vote in the elections that happen every year.
Local level voting is far more important than people realize.
Oh, my gosh. 100%.
Because it's weird. Politics actually trickles up more than you think it does. Politics actually trickles up more than you think it does.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once you start building constituents locally, it grows out of that. It's almost like it's very different than like economics, for example, or if you're in your job, you know, the manager kind of sets the tone and everybody kind of follows that. It's different in politics. It's almost like a growth. You can grow politics, but right now they're owning the local, local elections right now. I mean, how they're going to win the midterms is by focusing on those local elections.
I know a young lady who built her social media platform on bitching about everything in her city, in her state, in federal government or whatever. Bitching, upset about this, upset about that. But she is not a registered voter.
That's bullshit.
And so
this pisses me off every time I hear that shit.
Then don't talk to me, because you're not doing something effective that can change the things that you are bitching about.
Yeah.
So don't talk
speech,
to me.
You need to walk the walk.
You're like a TV show at this point. I don't want
to
hear it.
There's a lot of comments on this that we need to get to because we're out of time. Jeanette Brown says, "Ooh, I pity the Taiwanese woman who married him."
Elaine Chow, I think her name is.
Yeah.
Elaine Chow, I think her name is.
I met her a while ago, and her thinking is not far off from his. So, Ade says, "You can always expect to hear stuff like this from a white supremacist." Latoya says, "Bruh, it's not like we all don't know they're racist pieces of shit anyway." Mike Winter, "These fools just wear their hoods and robes and a Confederate flag pinned to the Capitol."
And they're bold now. And let me just say this, because I think a lot of times when we talk about white supremacists or the Republican Party, that people think that we are anti-white. And I am far from it. I am talking about a specific segment of our population that does not have my best interest, does not have Neo's best interest, does not have doesn't even have, honestly, Rob B's best, because he's an immigrant. If he came here, he would be an immigrant. Speaking French, they'd be like, I don't know, bro. Are you white enough?
Adegboyega says, hashtag bitch McConnell. Hashtag Mitch, please.
I'm like, don't say it. Moscow, bitch. I like Mitch, please, though. Mitch, please.
That's all he says. "I'm not really surprised this Jurassic tortoise would do or say some shit like this, but it's no less infuriating." Fuck him.
But then, Neo, you didn't bring up how he tried to backtrack from it.
Oh, yeah. Daria Winter was pointing that out. I was just going to read Daria Winter's comment on
college,
that.
When he was in college, he was at the March on Washington. Okay, so you got a black friend. You thought y'all were going
to
go and march on Washington. Were you one of the snipers? Were you one of the snipers that were trying to get MLK?
Probably, actually.
Why were you there?
Daria Winter says,
In 2019, when he was asked about his position on reparations for slavery, part of his response was, "Well, we've elected an African-American president. Like, that makes it right?"
Yes, all of a sudden. Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, well, you know, we elected Barack. We're
good. Yeah.
We're even.
Daria Winter says,
"Keep my name out of your mouth. Keep my name out of your mouth."
Daria Winter said, "The 1970s black folk did just that. Grassroots organizing had us elevated politically across the country. Study history." Yes. Yep. Start locally.
100.
All right. Is this truth, lies, or
shenanigans? Come on now.
It's all shenanigans today. It's all shenanigans.
I mean, he said it, so there's some truth in that, but
Shenanigans. Johnny's got shenanigans. Okay.
And like Truth Jackson Rob, she said on our Facebook page, this was not a Freudian slip. Nah,
he knew. No. I mean, it's just, that's who he is. That's exactly it. All right.
He's got his first time public speaking. This is how he feels.
Yeah. No question. All right. Let's get into our game show. Lighten things up a little bit. All right. Today's game is Interesting Thoughts. I'll ask you each various interesting thoughts, and you give me the answer and any related stories behind it. Whoever I think gives the most interesting thoughts wins the game and the final thought for the show. So, for example, in life, do you consider yourself generally as one who plays offense or defense?
I play. I told y'all before, I play.
You play. Exactly. That's what we're looking for.
Both sides of the coin. Don't come for me.
That's what we're looking for. Okay. Are we ready? Let's start off with, Lizzie today. Let's go.
Yay.
All right. T.S. Eliot said, anxiety is the handmaiden of creativity. What gives you anxiety, but could inspire your creativity too?
Jeez. That's a good one.
Failure.
Oh, that's failure. Deep. That's deep right there.
That was good.
So failure gives you anxiety, but also inspires your creativity.
Gives me anxiety every day because it's one of my biggest fears. Like I don't want to fail at anything. But because of that, I inspire, and I fail sometimes at it, but I inspire to be great at what I do, to be right about everything I say, to be great at what I do. So failure.
Love that answer. Love that answer.
That's
all right.
Great answer.
Robbie, when is it okay to lie?
I wish you'd given me this one.
How do you explain this one?
When is it okay to lie? It is okay to lie when the truth will bring about more harm than good, but not in a way that protects your self-interest. You have to remove yourself from that equation altogether.
Yeah, I'm with Lizzie. I'm looking at Lizzie's face. I'm like, no. I protect the hell out of myself.
If my freedom is at risk, I am lying. If my freedom is at risk, I am lying.
I ain't going to jail for none. I don't care if I did do it. Sense. Fuck it. I'm claiming innocent.
Neo did it.
You asked for all out lie to embellish or to modify slightly or to omit.
Oh, I'm skipping this. I'm like, this is stupid. All right, next one, Gianni. What's your personal key to happiness?
Happiness.
Lizzie's on the bottom.
I need to get some Liz and I'm happiness.
Where's my personal? By the way, while she's thinking, Robbie Jose says remove the ego. And Ade says lie when necessary. Go ahead, Gianni. Ade says lie when necessary.
That.
All right. What's your personal key to happiness?
Is just letting things go and being grateful. Letting things go and being grateful. Laughter.
Okay. We'll accept that. Nice. All right.
I like that.
Lizzie, is it better to not overeat or to not waste food? That's a good question, actually. Because I struggle with this all the time.
Me too.
The food's going to go bad. Like, I'm eating the shit out of it.
I'm one where, health-wise, I'm going to go with to not overeat. I waste food all. Y'all have no idea how much food I throw away each week. As a diabetic, health-wise, I can't afford to overeat. It will kill me. Okay. So I'm going to go with not overeat.
Fair enough. All right.
And it's so funny because Jose and I this week have made a very concerted effort to reduce our food waste, and we were quite successful this week. It was pretty good.
I think people will be amazed how much food we throw out. It's shocking.
It is a lot.
It's shameful.
All right, Robbie, how has travel made you a better person?
Travel has made me a better person by having honest and open exchanges with people from different countries and different cultures and remarking on the similarities that exist between all people. to experience different cultures and to recognize that I'm a guest and to be humbled by the history and the contributions of wherever I am.
By the way, I like it. I accept it. So Adeg Boyega says, don't waste food. And then Latoya Blakely says, same Lizzie, vodka is love.
That's happiness. Right. That's a good one.
All right, this is the last one. So, Gianni, what's the first thing you do when you get home from a trip?
Shower.
Yeah. Great answer. Hell yeah.
Hot shower.
Yep.
And eat. And lay down.
Neil, you accept that answer. That's the right answer.
All right. I actually, let's see, I'm going with Lizzie today. I liked her first answer. So Lizzie, you win the game, Lizzie. Good job.
Have you found a game for love? I like the
first answer. Failure also inspires you. All right, let's get some shout outs. Johnny Storm, shout out.
Yes, actually, shout out to Robbie Rock. This Wednesday, we're dropping your episode. So on Beyond the Stars. So we're excited. And we just want to say thank you again for sharing your story. We can't wait for everybody to hear it and to resonate. Thank you so much.
I'm looking forward to that, Robbie. I haven't heard it yet. I've heard all the other episodes. I haven't heard yours yet.
Save the best.
No pressure.
All right. Robert Rock, shout outs.
Shout out to Micah and Jay of the Nerdpocalypse. I will be making my third appearance on their podcast this Thursday, and their YouTube videos and podcast usually gets posted a few days later. But a very special shout out to my granddaughter, Annabella, who this week made her first peanut butter and jam sandwich all on her own. I saw the video of it, and it was just so amusing to hear my daughter recording it going, oh, good job, baby. That's perfect. But it's just to remember to revel in the innocence of it. When you see a child doing something for the first time or for the 10th time, when you've done it thousands of times, it's a process. You fucked up your first sandwich, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did. Lizzie.
Shout out. So piggyback off of Rob in terms of love for our children. Shout out to my goddaughter, Savannah Lee. Aww. Today is her 20th birthday. Her mom has been in tears like the past week. And I have too, just because I can't believe it's been 20 years. I was there from the beginning, there now. I love her dearly. And she's my twin, which her mom hates. This is a child that I didn't give birth to, but she looks exactly like me. So today is her 20th birthday. I love you so much. And we are going to have a Zoom party once the after show is over. So Savannah Annie, happy 20th.
Happy birthday.
Amazing.
I'm sticking with the family theme here. My shout outs to my niece Simone. I had dinner with her and my mother-in-law last night, and we had a great time. She's in high school, star soccer player. She's super smart, but she's also got a little swag to her. She got a little edge to her. She can get really, really competitive, but she's awesome. So shout out to my niece, Simone. And our final shout out goes to the winner of our Pet Shenanigans of the Week. Bobby sitting in front of the fireplace, sent in by Robin Pack Del Pezzo.
Bobby is a model.
Beautiful picture.
I think just need the wine chilling by the fireplace.
I know. Our My Pet Shenanigans cats are all over the place, but I think a lot of our dogs are model-esque.
Yes, our I agree. Dogs are really pretty. Sure.
Yeah.
All right. To see all of the pets and post your favorite pet's photo or video, join the TLS Pet Shenanigans Facebook group, mypetshenanigans.com. All right, and that is officially all of the time we have for today's show. I'd like to thank you guys for joining us. We hope that you maybe learned something, gained a new perspective, even got some things off your chest. We'll be back next week for another amazing guest, more deep discussions. Don't forget the podcast is available for download every Monday. So subscribe to Truth, Lies, Shenanigans wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Beyond the Scars podcast so you can hear Niecy J's episode. Her story is extremely deep. All right, and the conversation's not ending here. We are going to keep the cameras rolling for the after show. We'll probably have about 15 minutes. That'll be exclusively on TLSfans.com. And our winner for the final thought of the day, Miss Lizzie Enders. Take us out, Lizzie. Take us out.
So I, too, just want to thank Niecy J for joining us today and sharing her story. Stories of abuse, whether it be child abuse, whether it be domestic violence, they're not difficult. They are difficult, very difficult to tell. They're not easy to tell. So I think we should all, you know, reflect and look inside and look around us and kind of observe and see someone or look at someone who you suspect may be going through something. Doesn't mean you have to, you know, jump on them or whatever. But be very sensitive to someone's story. Especially, you know, given the fact that a lot of people, this is a story for a lot of people in society. Whether they're children, whether they're teenagers, adults, a lot of people are holding in, suppressing a lot of pain. So be open to their stories and be of some help. Help, don't hinder. Thank you, Niecy. Thank you for your story.
Yes. I think there's a lot of families out there that don't even realize the abuse that they've had. All right. Thank you, Lizzie, Gianni, Robbie Rock, and always our people behind the scene, bringing an awesome show, Nesmi, Ellen, Jose, Olivia E. But most importantly, I've got to thank you for watching and listening to our shenanigans each and every week. And we will see you next time.